I almost called you Coach. Chief, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay, very, very well. I want to start, Chief. We got the press release on yesterday's fire on Washington Street in Gloucester, and it looked like a really tough fire, and obviously a terrible thing for the homeowners. But the conditions, low humidity and high winds, not only that, but also the close proximity of the houses there on Washington Street, it must have made it very difficult for your team.
Yeah, it was definitely definitely a big challenge. I was out of town about an hour out of town, a little more than that actually, by the time I was able to get over there. So, you know, thankfully we got a lot of great people that are running it and working there and do a fabulous job every day. So, a lot of thanks to them for keeping this to just the one structure. For the most part, unfortunately, the neighbor that, as you said, some of those homes are in pretty close proximity. So the one that was the closest was not only the closest, but it was actually the area of origin of the fire that started on the outside of the house. So we're still looking in into what the actual cause is and the investigation. So State Fire Marshal was out working with our fire inspector to try to kind of sort out, you know, what was the cause of this thing. We know where it started in general, you know, outside in the rear of the property, in the area, in the vicinity of the elevated decks, and some of the way the additions and construction are on the back made it very difficult, very, very different kind of construction, you know, old school New England stuff that gets slapped onto old houses, which really makes our jobs tough. I get people, you know, need to do what they got to do to improve their homes and their environment, but sometimes the way it's done is not very helpful for managing a fire. And a fire that starts on the outside and literally eats its way through those materials and gets into the house, you know, it's taken a hold of the structure in a big way, and so we're already behind the eight ball when we get that call, and that's the point at which we got notice on this one, is that, you know, there's already an outside fire with a really good head start that was eating its way into the structure. And, you know, the homeowner on the second and third floor, one family that occupies those two levels, you know, saw the fire, you know, out the windows, and it was fully involved outside and already breaching into those walls. You know, if they're smelling smoke on the inside with the level of winds we had yesterday, that's because it's getting into the walls. Otherwise, nobody noticed the fire as it burnt outside for the number of minutes that it burned before it got that big. So that, you know, kind of tells me that smoke is getting moved along so quickly that they didn't even notice it until that fire had really, really got into the structure.
Chief, tell me about the chronology of your team and who was in charge first, because I know when you hear about a fire and then you hear a second alarm call, third alarm call, and then you get help from all over the community. So who was leading the way for you guys, and what was the chronology of deciding when you go second and third alarms?
Yeah, so that's, you know, those things have pretty much play themselves out pretty quickly for the deputies that are on duty, whether that's a captain in the acting capacity of a deputy or the normal shift commander, deputy chief. So Deputy Chief Phil Harvey was in charge yesterday. His group was on duty. You know, as soon as they arrived, they found that heavy outside fire involvement actually in the neighboring address from where the original call came in through 911, told us it was 86. But the fire itself actually originated, and the bulk of the fire was at 84. You know, the damage to 86 was due to exposure to that heat and flame. And so, yeah, so Phil maintained command the entire time. Like I said, you know, Bob and I, you know, Assistant Chief Rivas, returned in, as well as Deputy Chief LaGrande to assist him in that, along with other callback personnel and officers. But in those instances when we're down under a fourth, fifth alarm, we typically maintain command with the original incident commander that took command. We come in and we fulfill roles that need to be done to kind of expand that incident command system. Safety officers and division officers that are around the building taking charge of different portions of the operation to kind of reduce that span of control back to a manageable handful of people to talk to, so to speak, for the incident commander. So Phil remained in that role. We filled in where it needed to be done. You know, that fire transitioned fairly quickly from a transitional attack, meaning fighting it fairly offensively, but from the outside, not inside the building. So they initially tried to get in interior and do an interior attack, but because the windows had already broken out and there was such heavy fire on the outside, the wind was driving that fire into the home, and so crews could, and it was driving that fire right at the crews. And now that they have a door open, you just created a channel for all that heat and fire to chase more oxygen and fuel, and it's coming right at you like a freight train. So, you know, needless to say, they weren't in there long trying to engage in that fight and were driven out by the heat and the fire. Re-engaged it on the outside to put the bulk of it down, and then tried to re-engage again back on the inside. But by that time, this is an older home. Like I said, the construction was difficult with the additions, but we're pretty sure it's an old balloon frame home, and without fire stopping, and you're talking fire once it's in the walls, then it's getting into the floors, it's running all the way up the walls into the attic, and fire spread is everywhere. And unless you have a lot of people and a lot of lines in the building quickly, you're just not going to get that under control. You don't even really have a chance. And with the wind driving it right at the entry point for the crews, it's one of those situations where we know all the residents are out. We just can't take that high of a risk with our personnel. So, you know, be it as it may, and they gave it a really solid try on two separate, if not more than that, entries. But just the conditions with the wind were really, really the problem with trying to be able to stay offensive and interior.
Can you explain to me, Chief, about the electrical outage? Because power was out in the neighborhood for quite a while. So what danger did that entail, or how did that transpire?
Yeah, so that was an intentional power cut that we had done in order to make operations in those two buildings safer. In fact, the property at 86, part of the issue with that was not only the exposure to the heat and fire on the outside that started melting the siding and scorching the outside of the house, getting up into the soffit, into the attic, but it also damaged electrical on the home and shorted some things out and started to create a secondary electrical fire interior to the home. So, you know, we just need to get the power off in the entire area to make it a safer operation and to not extend what was already going on at 86. So killing the power had to happen up the street by grid, so it took out obviously a pretty large area, and then we were able to, you know, once we could safely disconnect the power from those individual homes, from the lines coming off the primaries down to the feeders into the house, that was done by National Grid for us, and then they restored energy to those lines. And they held off on that a little bit to give us more of an opportunity to kind of try to get in and hit hot spots from the outside, because the interior staircase was burnt out in that house, probably not even halfway through that whole initial firefight because of the intensity of the fire. So going from the second floor to the third floor wasn't even an option. And obviously with that kind of interior damage, floor joists were compromised, the staircases burnt out. We just can't put people in there. And now we can't access the inside of this box. And because of the intense wind, the fire was not burning in its normal method, right? It was burning, you know, horizontally, you know, versus vertically. Mm-hmm. So we're getting fire movement and heat movement that's getting pushed with the wind through the house from the back of the house towards Washington Street instead of the usual that would have been running up the back of the house and up into the attic space and that exterior rear wall where we could come in from the inside and just hammer away from the inside after we knock it down on the outside. But that fire was getting pushed and driven and fed by that high intense wind. It was kind of like a wind tunnel back there. As windy as it was all over town, the way the homes are positioned there and where these openings on this house were, it was like a blowtorch for our folks trying to get in there.
Yeah, what video I saw, that's exactly how it would be described. Finally, Coach, Chief, I know that everybody is safe. Obviously, devastation to the residents. I read that the Red Cross is involved in helping them. The city of Gloucester is a community that gets together when something happens like this. So, in your experience, is there a way for Gloucester neighbors to maybe chip in and give aid to the people who were displaced?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Red Cross was great. We got a hold of them yesterday, and they got out to take care of it. So we had a total of four families, right, two in each building. There was, you know, the family in the upper level of 84 was a family of four, and a single gentleman in the lower level. And then I believe it was five, and four was the split on the family in 86. And so the Red Cross was able to get out and give them that initial level of immediate support, so they have some funding and an ability to get to, you know, temporary shelter, you know, whether at a hotel or what have you, and get some clothes and food and whatnot till they can start to sort through this with the rest of whatever resources they have, whether that be, you know, renter's insurance, homeowner's insurance, to get through the rest of this and get back to their life, literally. So, yeah, for local residents to chip in, I know Open Door had reached out this morning already through the mayor to try to, you know, track down who are these folks and what could they do to help. And so those resources, the people in town that do that best, are really those social service organizations versus the city. They have the ability to quickly and efficiently collect either, you know, clothing or food, and if people want to make donations, that type of thing, that is really the best source to go to. So I would say anybody in town that has the, you know, wants to help and wants to jump in there and pitch in for this family, that's awesome. Reach out to the people that you normally deal with for donations to help others in the community in need, because they are really good about getting a hold of us and getting a hold of these families to help support them when they have these kind of tragedies in their life. So Open Door is a great resource. I'm sure Action will be able to jump in there and help to whatever degree. But there's, you know, the Gloucester Fund. There's several different, you know, organizations in town that do this, and they can often pivot and set up, you know, special accounts and take in cash donations or gift cards if people want to give them, and then get those things distributed in, you know, in a fair and equitable and appropriate way. Much really better than the city can do that. We just don't really have a mechanism to take in, especially funding, just because of the bureaucracy of government. It works better through those organizations that do it all the time and every day.
That's Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.